Coming up on this week's episode of Search with Kanda, I'm talking with Adam DeFrisco from Atagro all about Baidu. That's right, I'm finally talking about Baidu. If you want to learn about Baidu and search culture in China in general, this is the podcast episode for you. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Search with Kanda. I am your host, Jack Chambers Ward, and I'm very excited for this week's episode. We're finally diving into Baidu. I know it's something we've kind of touched upon a few episodes. I know Mark and I touch on it every few months. It kind of comes up in the news. But I'm learning a lot these last few weeks, I'll tell you that much, because I have got Adam DeFrisco as my very special guest this week. Adam is a fantastic, brilliant international SEO expert, specifically focusing on a lot of the Chinese market side of things. As we'll get onto in the interview, Adam lived in China for quite a while and really, really knows his stuff when it comes to Chinese language, Chinese search culture, and how much that changes. So if you're wanting to learn about how to rank on Baidu, what Baidu considers ranking factors and how it differs from Google, and the kind of really interesting topic that Adam brought of how Google seems to be shifting and becoming more Baidu-like over the last couple of months with all of the crazy stuff that's been going on the SERPs and the changes that have been happening and the focus on AI, which we don't really talk about. We actually managed to go an entire episode without talking about AI, by the way, which is, I think, a new record in 2024. But yes, please do stay tuned for my fantastic interview with Adam DeFrisco after a word from our sponsors. The first sponsor for this week's episode is Also Asked. You can go to alsoask.com and check out this fantastic and unique intent research tool. As we probably already know, search intent is at the core of everything we do as SEOs. Even if you're not directly working in content, understanding what your users are trying to achieve through their searches is still pretty important. I think we can all agree. On top of this, Google has told us that it takes up to 9 searches for users to complete their goals. This can be a pretty hard picture to capture, to be honest, with traditional keyword research tools. So what if you could get hold of up-to-the-minute questions that users have asked that have been clustered by intent by Google themselves? Well, that's exactly what Also Asked actually does. Also Asked mines and organizes Google's People Also Asked data in real time, showing you the next most likely question your searchers are going to ask. Best of all, it's completely free. You don't even need to create an account to try out Also Asked. Of course, if you do find it useful, there are paid options as well. We have the free, we have the light, and we have the pro options in terms of accounts that you can subscribe to. At the touch of a button from these accounts, you can download not only the questions people are asking, but also the answers Google has selected, the website URLs, and the titles that are ranking for those answers as well. Also Asked has the world's only API for People Also Asked data, meaning you can combine this data you're pulling from whatever questions you're asking directly into tools. You can combine it with things like ChatGPT to really supercharge your content briefs and transform the way you write content at scale. Go to alsoasked.com and check out this fantastic intent research tool today. This week's sponsor is Optimizer, the PPC management software that is built for PPC people. Optimizer contains everything you need to create, optimize, and justify high-performing PPC campaigns. You'll never have to worry about security again. You'll never have to worry about setting up complex data sharing between apps or juggling multiple invoices. With their dashboard, you get a high-level overview of any ad account connected to Optimizer. You can quickly see key metrics, recommended actions, and how to set up the next campaign all in one place. The Rule Builder uses easy drag-and-drop conditions to automatically take action when you need them to. And this is a real experience from my previous role, where we had an ad that ran throughout the holiday period when it shouldn't have been, and I think it spent nearly 6 times its recommended budget by accident. If I had an optimizer at that time, it would have paused the campaign automatically when it hit its budget, and we would have saved a lot of trouble and a lot of money for our client. You also get automated alerts for things such as KPI metrics and budgets in general. Optimizer monitors what you specify and delivers alerts to you so you can intervene as needed. Optimizer also integrates with other apps such as Slack, Teams, and Zapier. So if you need to get alerts where you need them, you can do that by integrating Optimizer with those tools as well. The Optimizer team includes world-renowned experts such as CEO Fred Vallès, product evangelist Nava Hopkins, and of course, the PPC puppy, HK. Now, we've spoken about this topic on the podcast before, so you probably already know that ad platforms are pretty much driven by profit motive and benefit when you spend more, even if it's not in your best interest to do so, and it's on lower value traffic. Advertisers need to put their interests and those of their brands and clients first. So the idea of PPC insurance is taking out a policy, essentially by using software like Optimizer, that covers you when things go south. With everything you need for audits and reporting, Optimizer is the all-in-one PPC toolkit that makes managing paid search easier, faster, and less prone to error. To start your 2-week free trial, click the link in the show notes or the video description down below, or go to optimizer.com. That's a 2-week free trial by clicking the link in our show notes or in the video description down below if you're watching on YouTube. My guest for this week is the senior digital marketing strategist over at Attigrow. Welcome to the show, Adam DeFrisco.
Thank you, Jack. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on, man. I know we've been in touch for a little while. You very graciously rescheduled this call because I had some other stuff come up. So I appreciate you taking the time to come out and have a chat with me. And we're going to talk all about Baidu, which is something we don't really talk about that much on this show. I will hold my hands up and be guilty of that because it's not a search engine we particularly cover, but it's something I know you have a lot of experience with, having lived and worked in China yourself and having a lot of experience with that. I've read a few of your articles. I've seen a few of your podcasts. It's a really, really interesting topic. I'm excited to learn a lot from you about Baidu. And kind of the topic you brought to the table was, is Google becoming more like Baidu? And I think with all the changes that have been happening with Google over the last few months, that is a really spicy, interesting question to bring up. So what was your kind of initial thought process for bringing that specific question to the topic as for the podcast?
Yeah, it's something I've been tossing around in my head for a while. I mean, even when I moved back to the States, and you know, now I do primarily do work in Google, but there's a lot of things that have been happening lately that I go to the SERPs and I think, you're looking a little Baidu-y. And I would, you know, tweet it out as a joke, but it's happening a little bit more. So I started actually formulating it and thinking about, you know, the difference in how people search in China and how people search, you know, in outside of China. And there's just a lot of parallels. It's a little fishy. So yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that.
I like the phrase, it's looking a little Baidu-y. I like that.
Exactly.
I think there are a lot of like myths and misconceptions, and this is true of SEO in general. I think there are so many. I've done, between Mark and I think we've done 3 different episodes on common misconceptions, SEO urban myths, all this kind of stuff, like old ranking factors that no longer matter and all that kind of thing. And I think this is especially true for Baidu because, like I said, I'll hold my hands up. I am not an expert on this subject at all. It's exactly why you're on the show, Adam. But I think, would you agree that there are a lot of misconceptions and urban myths that even, you know, people have been working in SEO for decades at this point still believe about Baidu in 2024?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a really big problem in the, you know, Baidu SEO community. There's not that many, especially when you compare it to, you know, Google SEO experts, there's really not that many Baidu SEO experts out there. We can get into more about that, you know, why that is a little bit later, but there, I think a lot of, you know, I won't name names here, but a lot of big search engine publications, you know, want to get that Baidu search traffic because a lot of people do search for it. But what they're doing is just kind of regurgitating things that are either super outdated or just flat out people think, oh, it's China, they probably do it this way, and don't really check sources or do anything like that. So luckily we have, you know, a couple really, really great, you know, Baidu SEO voices. Marcus Pentzak is probably, you know, he pumps out Baidu content daily. He's a great follow. I mean, he actually just did a Baidu ranking factor study that's pretty recent. I collaborated on that. A bunch of Baidu SEO experts, trustworthy ones, collaborated on it. And it really gets down to the bottom of, you know, is something a ranking factor for Baidu. So luckily we have voices, but yes, there's tons of outdated and just flat out wrong information out there.
Yeah, I think that ranking factor study you sent over to me, published by Jademond, like you said, co-authored by Marcus, and includes friend of the show, Sarah Presh as well. Shout out to Sarah. Sarah's awesome. Yeah. And I know Simon from Dragon Metrics was on there as well, like providing lots of different data using Majestic data, Dragon Metrics data, Search Metrics data, all this kind of stuff, and diving into a lot of different sides of things. And
I found it really, really interesting. Again, I'll hold my hands up. I have not read all 220 pages or whatever it is of it in full detail. I have read a lot of it over the last week or so and found it really, really interesting. I think the kind of my main takeaways were how similar in many ways it is to Google, and exactly as you kind of brought up with that question, right? That is Google becoming more like Baidu? A lot of stuff we've seen in recent shifts seems to be more longer established in Baidu, if that makes sense. Like there are a lot of things where we think like, oh, we all talk about how important links are and how important content structure is and how important internal links are. You know, we talk about this all every episode of the podcast pretty much because that's what us as SEOs talk about, right? And to see a lot of common threads, but even sort of like conceptual and industry-wide threads, not just the kind of on-page technical kind of stuff, there's a lot of kind of like wider user experience discussions that seem to be kind of similar between the two as well from what I've learned. And I think it's really interesting coming into it from my perspective of I'm coming in from that. Yeah, Baidu's kind of like, it's the Wild West of SEO. It's all, you can do whatever you like and just stuff all your keywords and nobody cares or whatever, you know, that old-fashioned, old, outdated stuff, as you said there. But I think it is actually a lot more nuanced and a lot more kind of what you would expect from modern SEO, for want of a better phrase, than I think a lot of people realize. And listeners and viewers, I'll put a link in the show notes if you do want to go and check out the Jademond full, like I said, 220 page ranking factor study. We will be referencing it throughout this episode, so I highly recommend you go and check it out. And huge credit to you, Adam, and the team that worked on it. So yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of those little things, and it, yeah, that study does go into every single little tiny minute detail. But the thing is, like, since there's so much of that outdated information, you still see a lot of the sites doing practices that, you know, the Baidu SEO experts would say, you know, that's doing nothing for you. Probably the best example of that is meta keywords, right? Baidu did support meta keywords for a long time. They have come out and said publicly that they don't support, you know, meta keywords anymore. You still find meta keywords on tons, especially Western brands that have branched out into China, have made a Chinese site. You still see it all the time. So, you know, it's one of those things where people look, they say, oh, look, the top players are doing it. Let's do it too. And it just kind of keeps going on and on and on. So yeah, there's a lot of examples of that.
Yeah, I think meta keywords one, I think because I'm guessing where that kind of misconception comes from is Baidu held on to that for a longer period of time than Google did. Once Google had already kind of like disavowed that and not worried about it for a few years, it was still a relevant thing on Baidu. And as you were saying, because people don't particularly look into the most up-to-date data or don't have access to something like this huge study, now you do, folks. There's no excuse. Go and check it out. Then you just pay attention to the news from 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago, right? It's like, oh, well, I know that they did it after Google stopped doing it, so they're probably still doing it. And there's just kind of that assumption. And one of the stats I pulled out from the study that I found really interesting, you mentioned the Chinese sites, right? The .cn domain kind of theory that everyone has. Like, oh yeah, the .cn, you have to have a .cn domain, otherwise you're just not going to rank. And the like top level, like almost one of the first stats I saw in the study was .com domains make up 73% of the top ranking domains compared to 14% for .cn. You've also got .com.cn, which I believe was the next one down at like 6 or 7%, but 73.com pretty quickly kind of debunks that myth, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, yeah, those are probably the biggest, we probably just covered the two biggest ones. So meta keywords, .cn, you have to be hosted in China. Those two kind of fall under the category that the ccTLD and the hosting, it's probably fall under the category where if you do have those things, you know, is it going to give you a little boost? Is it a ranking factor? Maybe a little, but is it necessary? Do you have to have it? Absolutely not. You know, like you mentioned, most of the top ranking sites are .com. So yeah, it's kind of a weird middle ground between, it's always the, is it a ranking factor discussion? You know, the same kind of stuff that we have with Google. Like, no, but is it still good to do? Probably.
Yeah, that's a whole conversation, again, we have all the time on the podcast. That Is it directly a ranking factor? Maybe. Is it better for user experience? Does it make sense for your users, for your readers? Is it likely to get people to recommend your site to their friends and family? Are you going to get word of mouth? Are you going to get, you know, more brand awareness and brand recognition, all that kind of stuff? Is it better for the user experience? Is kind of what we should be doing at the end of the day. And I know, thankfully, that is where a lot of modern SEO people and, you know, the discussion of SXO, that search experience optimization side of things, that kind of hybridization of UX and SEO coming together. Thankfully, I think we're moving in the right direction for a lot of people. And like I said, I was pleasantly surprised, because my knowledge was well outdated, that Baidu seems to be also moving in that direction as well. There are a lot of similar signals for, in my opinion, some of the improvements, despite the chaos of the recent helpful content update and dodgy things that Google's been up to. We are still moving in an overall positive direction. And I feel the same way from my brief exposure to Baidu, from my little bit of research and reading through the ranking factor study. Both search engines seem to be moving in a more user-focused direction. Would you agree with that, Adam?
Yeah, I think so. You know, from everything, like you mentioned, from all the SEOs that I'm listening to, either on podcast or, you know, whatever, all the content that people are pushing out, it does seem to be moving that way. The search kind of environment in China is a bit different. The way people use Baidu is a bit different. So it's a little bit hard to draw an exact parallel, but moving in the right direction, yeah, I think so.
So how heavily is Baidu used in China? You hinted at it there, like it's a little bit different, because I always use the example of, we use the term Google just to search for stuff. Like, it has become a verb in and of itself outside of the search engine. Even if you're accidentally, God forbid, searching on Bing or DuckDuckGo or something, you accidentally use your browser's default search. Oh, I'm just going to go Google that. It's a verb, right? Is Baidu as ubiquitous in China, or are there other options or other methods of searching in China?
It's my favorite question, because it's a big thing that people don't really realize, that search culture can be different, that people can search in an entirely different way. And it is like that in China. So I'll start by saying Baidu kind of follows a lot what Google does, right? Google had BERT, Baidu came out with ERNIE. You know, Google has this featured snippet, and then Baidu kind of copies. So a lot of the stuff kind of starts transferring over from one to the other. So we started to say Googling, right? Go Google it. Baidu came out with Baidu Yixia, which is, you know, Baidu for a second. But it's the same type of slogan. So they do try. But how heavily is Baidu used is a really good question. The way that people search, when I first went over to China and tried to use Baidu like I used Google, you run into some issues. And in general, if you ask the Chinese public their opinions about Baidu, it's ridiculed. You know, it's kind of made fun of a lot in China. The biggest complaints are the ads. Which are similar to Google, but a lot of queries will trigger kind of like super ads, like restaurant searches have, you know, they take up a huge portion of the SERP. So a Chinese user got sick of the ads. And then a big, big thing is Baidu has a lot of their own properties and services. They have like Baidu Tieba, which is like kind of a Reddit-like platform, or Baidu Baike, which is like Wikipedia. So they're all owned by Baidu, but they're their own websites. And I think I could be wrong here, but that ranking factor study, I believe it was 60% of the top ranking positions were Baidu owned properties, something like that. And then if you look in the top 10, it's, you know, a huge amount of the owned Baidu properties. So people got kind of sick of that too. And China is absolutely an app heavy culture. They are all on their phones. They're way more app heavy than we are over here. So when you would ask somebody in China, where should we go to eat for dinner? They wouldn't go to Baidu. They would go to Dazhong Dianpin, or, you know, one of the Yelp like platforms. If you ask them how do I do this? How do I fix this in my apartment or whatever? They would go to TikTok. They wouldn't go to Baidu. And when I would talk to Chinese people over here, they would see us Google like a shopping query, you know, we're shopping for a product. You Google it, Amazon's going to show up. You go to Amazon, and it's a conundrum to them. They're like, why would you not just go to Amazon? It doesn't connect for them. They don't understand. So I see a lot of things in Google now, like, especially with that, you know, the hidden gems update, with Reddit, which I'm fine with. I love Reddit. But at what point do people just start going to Reddit? And I know this has been a conversation for a long time. Like, I think it was, who was it that had that study about Gen Z using TikTok more as their primary search engine? Was it Glenn Gabe? I think had that. So we've been talking about it for a while, but there are things that are progressing in Google right now that just make me think, you know, that it's moving a little bit. You know, could it be eventually that scenario? So Baidu is still used, just as I think Google will always be used. But they, in China, the platform that they're searching on entirely depends on what they're searching for. So right now for Baidu, like B2B is really heavily used on Baidu. Any sort of research for like students, or if you really want like an expert opinion on something, Baidu searches are still really relevant. But a lot of businesses that came to me, you know, when I was working with Baidu SEO, a lot of businesses would come to me and I would say, listen, you got to get on a lot of other platforms. It's not just about your website. It's about getting on, you know, Little Red Book, which is a really popular kind of blogging type website. But that ranks very high as well. So it's about attaching yourself to a bunch of different platforms so that you can rank on Baidu on those platforms. So I think we might be headed that direction with Google as well.
Yeah, I think that's a common discussion. Again, we've been having a lot with that kind of multi-platform, multimedia approach to your content, right? And as much as this is not a ranking factor, and that's not the correct term for it, but the fact that you could create a YouTube short and a TikTok and a long-form YouTube video and a podcast and a text article, all essentially about the same thing, and they would rank for different but similar queries, right? And this is something I've been experimenting with the podcast. I don't know if you guys watching on YouTube have noticed the little YouTube shorts I've been doing and a few things I've been posting on TikTok and stuff like that, trying different titles on different platforms to see what sticks and what works. If, oh, what works as a podcast title does not necessarily work as a YouTube short title. And that clip from that podcast that is only 60 seconds long works as a TikTok because it looks like an isolated thing that is part of this broader conversation. And having different platforms is such a key part of that. I know I usually say like the multimedia side of things, I describe it in a very esoteric video, audio kind of things, but you're totally right. The fact that these sites that host these things get ranked well, essentially, and you get examples there like Little Red Book, where you can almost essentially, for want of a better phrase, kind of piggyback off of the goodwill and the good ranking you'll get from that site, right? By not just putting your, you know, .com blog or whatever it is on and then chucking it out to the world and hoping for the best. Actually having it on multiple platforms. And again, you're totally right, talking about the TikTok side of things as well. Like the way people search on TikTok is different to how people search on Google. But we're also seeing a lot more short form video content show up on the SERPs as well. So you're getting delivered TikToks and YouTube shorts and Instagram reels and all that kind of stuff as well. So having it in different available places, having your content in different on different platforms and in different kind of media allows people to discover you multiple ways. Something that's common for Google also is common for Baidu.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think Baidu is probably just like a step heavier in that direction, especially for small businesses. You know, if you're a small business looking to compete on Baidu, your website, it's significantly harder than ranking your website on Google. But if you get into, if you put your business, make a profile page on some of the Baidu owned platforms, you start answering questions on some of those platforms. Like you said, you create a video channel. Bilibili is a really popular, like a YouTube type thing. You start making those rank great. So yeah, I think it's a little heavier. My first suggestion to small businesses that are going into China is you got to get on those platforms. It's the only way to start instead of kind of in the West where you can create a great website and start pushing out content and you can, you know, relatively quickly get your website ranking.
Yeah, definitely. I think you mentioned the kind of Reddit equivalents there as well and the shift we've seen post the October-November helpful content update of this surge in visibility for Reddit across basically every query you can possibly think of. And I think a lot of that stuff is leaning towards the UGC side of things, leaning more on expert commentary and all that kind of stuff as well. I know there's a if I'm trying to get this right, there is a Baidu-owned equivalent of Quora. That is it, Zhihu?
Baidu Zhihu. Yeah.
So that reads to me like they are both moving in a similar direction towards that kind of. A lot of people are losing trust in us, for want of a better phrase, us SEOs, the people who are, you know, manipulating the SERPs, and going back to that the Verge article of us being content goblins and all that kind of stuff. But then you have these other platforms that provide that almost that level of trust outside of like, oh, this is actually written by a human, by a subject expert, by a person who knows actually what they're talking about. And you have that, again, that element of the EAT side of things, right, where we talk about so much in Google. For me, that seems like Baidu is also already in that space, right? It's kind of what you were saying just now.
Yeah, and I think the two big questions in my mind are, number one, I think Baidu got to that point a lot because the Baidu search results weren't, you know, they're not very good, in my personal opinion. You know, it's getting better, but I think intent gets, you know, screwed up a lot. You know, what the big players are always ranking above the smaller ones, so you always find the same things. So with Google, I think one big question is the quality, right? There was that German study that Google search quality is getting worse. It's proven now. Will they keep going?
Google said, no, everything's fine. Don't worry, we're actually getting better. So problem solved.
Forgot about that. Sorry. Yeah, okay. We can toss that away. So that's one big question I have is will Google search, you know, continue to decline? How does the public, you know, us SEOs, we live in Google every day. We have our own opinions, but what is the mass thing? So that's one thing. If it keeps declining, then, you know, maybe it goes this direction. The other thing is the search functionality on those platforms. You know, whether people search on TikTok, I've tried to search on TikTok. It's not very good. You know, I have to scroll through a lot to get to what I'm looking for. Reddit, why don't people just go to Reddit? Because the search feature is not as good as if you're going to Google, in my opinion. So if they start ramping up their search features and Google quality declines, I think it's a real possibility to look like the search environment in China. Probably not going to happen, but sure could. And it could mimic a lot of what we're seeing over there.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. When platforms don't have, especially if you're so used to using Google and you're kind of aware of, you again, us working in SEO professionally, like you kind of know what you're going to get roughly when you search for them. You know what to expect. You kind of go in knowing your search intent and all this kind of, even people who don't work professionally in SEO, you have that in the back of your mind, whether you know it or not, you have that thought of like, oh yeah, I think I'm going to buy something, or, oh, I'm just in the research stage at this point. You kind of have that in your thought process, and you're totally right. There was the huge search and the huge surge, in fact, in like people just tacking on the word Reddit on the end of searches on Google. And this was, again, a huge part of why we're seeing so much of this massive uptick in Reddit's visibility, because a lot of people see it as like, well, people were just searching Reddit anyway, so let's just chuck Reddit at them on every SERP possible. So, you know, 9 out of top 10 results are Reddit now. So here you go. You wanted to search for Reddit, you get all the Reddit you can handle.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's an interesting kind of shift in the kind of search behaviors, right? Like, you're thinking about those, like you said, if you're searching on TikTok, I've tried to search on TikTok for, I know the exact video I'm looking for. I was like, oh, I missed that, but I can't find it in my previous history or whatever. But I know the exact thing I'm looking for. I know the topic it's about. I'm sure I can find it. And could I find it? No, I could not. Not with 10 minutes of searching on TikTok. I typed, even now, I can't remember what it was, the subject of the video TikTok into Google, and it was in the like initial video carousel straight away in 4 seconds. And I was like, why is it so difficult on this platform?
Exactly. And that's, you know, I have the Chinese version of TikTok, which is called Douyin. I have that on my phone. They've been pushing search on the Chinese TikTok a lot more than I think that we have here with, you know, TikTok in the West. So it does work a little bit better on the Chinese version, which, you know, I think I either tweeted or LinkedIn article about that somewhere floating out there. But I wouldn't be surprised if they start making, you know, obviously they do have the search functionality. I think it's not very new, but it's a little bit recent that they started to have that pop-up search on TikTok. So I wouldn't be surprised if they start making a little bit more of a push if TikTok is still around. But yeah.
Yeah, I know TikTok in the West has started opening up because it's always been fairly opaque about what actual data we can get from searches on TikTok, right? You get the number right. of views, like this particular topic has 46 billion views or whatever. It's like, yeah, I guess you can kind of equate those numbers to each other so you, in a keyword volume-y kind of way, which again, outdated right. SEO stuff, speaking of which, like you just go for the one with more views and just hope for the best.
Right.
But now they are actually with, I know some of the creator tools and stuff are opening up with more search data and more, giving users more data to be able to adjust that kind of stuff. Do you think there is mm-hmm. a similar kind of transparency in terms of data from Baidu? Because as much as Google, you know, we question Google a lot of the time, sometimes you have to really, really read between the lines of what Google officially says and stuff like that. How is the kind of opacity versus transparency from Baidu side of things?
Sure. I think it's very similar. There's a couple aspects. I mean, Baidu does have their Baidu Analytics. They have Baidu Zhiyuan, which is their webmaster tools that are really helpful. I mean, they're great platforms. Tough to get set up if you don't, you know, speak Chinese, but they're they're useful if you get there. So in that regard, I think it's, you know, pretty similar. Baidu's algorithm updates, it's pretty interesting actually, from this aspect of it. Baidu has historically had a pretty tough time dealing with web spam. Mm. So a couple of things have resulted from that. The first one is when you get hit, if you get hit by, you know, if you get a manual penalty on Baidu, you're pretty much toast. I've never had it personally on any of my sites, but from what I've heard, that's the death of your site. You know, there's the recovery's not going to happen. Most likely if you get hit by a Baidu one, and for good reason. I mean, if they put you out in the doghouse, you know, and they have a hard time picking up on web spam, but they got you, and they're not going to give you another chance. The other thing is their algorithm updates are, first of all, they're awesome. The coolest algorithm update names on the planet. There's like Ice Bucket, Hurricane, there's some other good ones, Fire Beacon, the thunder update.
I'll take the thunder update. That's cool as hell.
Sorry, Penguin and Panda.
I'll take thunder. Thank you very much.
No, and I don't know when we started doing August, you know, September helpful.
I miss Penguin and Panda and all the fun right. little names. It kind of like, I mean, it's a bad way of putting it, but it kind of humanizes them, right? Despite the fact they're animal names, like it gives them a little bit right. of like, oh, I remember the panda days. I remember pre-Penguin. Like you can't just be like. Because the way I referred to it earlier in this podcast, it was the October, November helpful core update thing.
Right.
Like, cool. That's not a... If I could just go like, I don't know, squiggly poop from October 2023. Like, there you go. Nice. Just be like, yeah. Then I know... We all know what we're talking about. And now we're getting updates. I know this isn't a new thing. I made it sound like a new thing. But where they cross over, right? You're getting an update rolling out as another one begins as well. And there's right. a lot of stuff there. Like... Can we just not have a nice little cute name to call this little segment of time
and
live and separate our nice little SEO eras into various different things? I want to live in the thunder era or the hurricane era.
No cool living it is life to say, oh, post yeah, ice bucket. The ice bucket. Exactly. Post ice bucket. Yeah. So in those updates, not only do they have the most badass names, but also they are really in depth. They're really transparent about what this update is. And they try to give, I mean, it's basically like an intimidation factor to people trying to spam on Baidu. So they try everything they can. So yeah, I think transparency in that regard, like transparency for the purpose of SEO is, is pretty solid. Transparency in terms of like, you know, shady backdoor deals. I don't know. They're obviously very tied to the government. Every big tech giant in China is tied to, you know, the party. So in that regard, you know, it gets a little shady, of course, but for SEO purposes, yeah, there's pretty much everything you need there.
Yeah, I think there's a common kind of thing when you mentioned like the tech giants being tied to the party, to the government there. The ICP license is the thing I think quite a few people have heard of. But what that actually means, what that actually, you know, it makes it sound like every single website in the world has to be registered with the government in again, to be nerdy about it, in like an Avengers Civil War style thing, right, where you've all got to be like, well, you've got to register yourself with the government and be accountable for your actions and stuff like that. Do you, yeah, is that how that is kind of perceived, you know, from your experience, you know, coming from Western perspective, do you think that's common? And from a Chinese perspective, is it just kind of normalized over there? Because from my understanding, it's when your website is hosted in mainland China, right, rather than just having a website that is available on Baidu.
Right. It's a little bit of a pain. It's a process to get it. It's first, I'll say it is not 100% required. You know, again, is it a ranking factor? Maybe. Do you need it to show up on Baidu? No. So yeah, you have to be hosted in China. And it might give you a little bump in rank. I mean, it goes back to kind of a EAT type of situation, right? You're going to have more trust in that website. They also, on the SERPs, on Baidu SERPs, for websites that have the license, sorry, they'll have a little shield, a little icon that says like trusted. So for SEO purposes, we always recommend it. You know, it's good. And if you are hosted in China, you know, it could be faster. Your, you know, response, it's going to be, yeah, faster. Website will be faster. So I don't know. I don't get much more into it than that in terms of, you know, the actual documentation, what you're signing up for, all of that. I kind of let the businesses deal with that. I don't think it's as scary as a lot of people make it out to be. But, you know, I'm just an SEO. So what do I know?
I think there is a lot of demonizing of, well, this is a whole other conversation about how, you know, Chinese people and the Chinese language and Chinese culture is treated by many people in the West, of like, oh, they're all, it's all nothing but spam. It's all, you know, illegal stuff. It's all just, again, that wild west of SEO kind of misconception that we've just been debunking for the last half an hour. But I think there's a lot of that when it comes to like, oh, you have to be registered with the government. Oh, it's a totalitarian, like authoritarian, you can't do anything without the government. It's basically 1984 out there. You can't do anything. Oh, it's crazy. Like the classic kind of, for want of a better phrase, Republican freak out kind of thing for how they picture China, considering that Donald Trump's catchphrase at this point is just the word China.
Right.
but I think like coming around and thinking about the Chinese language itself, right? Like, because again, please, you know far more about this than I do, Adam. There isn't a Chinese language, right? There are multiple different languages, even within mainland China. Of course, there is a lot of crossover and different dialects and stuff within that. But how do you think that affects? Because, again, we talk about hreflangs, we talk about all this kind of stuff in SEO. A lot of us are pretty experienced with like multilingual SEO and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. How much is the Chinese language side of things and localization, how much does that affect things in Baidu?
It takes it to a whole different level. So Baidu is kind of unique. Well, I don't know if it's unique. I don't know if, because I don't know too much about like Yandex or Naver. I don't know if they work this way. But China is, Baidu, if you look at their meta description on the homepage, it's the world's leading Chinese search engine. They want to be a search engine just for the Chinese language, for Chinese searchers in mainland China. That's it. They have, you know, there's actually been a lot of, I've heard other people say, yeah, they might branch out at some point, but I guarantee you none of us think it's coming soon. So like as of right now, they don't support hreflang. They don't recognize hreflang. So it takes it to a whole nother level. There's a lot of times where if there's a brand that doesn't have a Chinese language site, but is indexed on Baidu. So if they're in, say they're in English, right? The results towards the top of the SERPs will all be Chinese language sites that are talking about that brand, and then you'll see the brand way down. So if you want to have any chance, it has to be solid in Chinese. So it's a really big deal. And I mean, it goes beyond even just the content or the language, like payment options. They don't want to see, you know, Google Wallet or PayPal. They want to see Weixin Jifu and Alipay, you know, all the Chinese platforms. Certifications, they want to see Chinese certifications. They don't want to see any, you know, other Western brands that they don't recognize. Linking, internal and external linking. If you're linking a ton to other language sites, to English language sites, that's not great for Baidu SEO. They're only looking for Chinese links, internal and external. So it gets, you'll see a lot of websites. I think one travel company that I worked for back in the day, they had all subfolders. for all of their different languages. And then for China, they had a completely different domain. So it's, yeah, it's really, you know, I'm not saying you have to do it that way, but Baidu only wants to see Chinese language content for Chinese users. Pretty intense.
That is pretty intense. Funnily enough, this is something I had a little bit of experience with before my SEO career. So for a bit of context for listeners and viewers, and Adam, I don't know if you've heard me talk about this in the podcast before, I used to work in an international language school. That's where I built my first website for a company I'm working at and stuff. And we had a lot of Chinese students. And it was so dependent on recommendations from other Chinese people and other Chinese sources. So we would be paying for advertising in, like, you know, local student newspapers and stuff in parts of China where we were looking to branch out at. And so many, like, you have to get approval of the parents for the students to come over and all this kind of stuff. And it was a real kind of shift in mindset in terms of our advertising of, no, you need to advertise in Chinese to Chinese parents. Whereas we were also a mature school. This is not just kids we're talking about. We had adult students as well. But the majority of our students were coming over from China were younger, so tend to be below 21 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was a really interesting kind of shifted mindset where we had to not just think about marketing to adults. We then had to market to parents to then, again, build those trust signals, as you were just saying there, Adam. Like, understand that, yeah, we are a reputable school. We have these accreditations. We have this stuff. We have been proven we have, and then testimonials from our, you know, Chinese students in Chinese in video format and all this kind of stuff. That was a big, like, realization thing for me. The same was true for our Arabic speaking students as well, having Arabic testimonials and how much of that culture is driven by friends and family and word of mouth and recommendations and all that kind of stuff. Right. Comes back around to the search culture you were mentioning earlier as well. Like, and funnily enough, it's the episode I did with Sarah Presh. I think it was a couple of years ago now. We were talking about how culture shapes not only the way we search, but the way we create our content and the way it's not just, oh, chuck an hreflang, stick it through Google Translate, you'll be fine. Like, okay, good luck, you know, simplified Mandarin getting ranking anywhere interesting on Baidu. You have, you know, no luck there at all, as I'm sure you know more than I do, Adam. But that was our experience, just a tiny little school. Bear in mind, we're a school of like 200 students in Norwich in England. So we're an absolute drop in the sea. But yeah, it was really interesting for me to think about that and have to kind of rethink about it culturally first and really kind of shift your brain into like, okay, this is not the same as advertising in the US compared to Canada, compared to, you know, South America or parts of Europe, which is where we got a lot of our students from. Then shifting to Chinese students was such a, like, you know, mindset shift in the culture side of things.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to it. Like, I mean, you mentioned all the dialects. There are, you know, lots and lots of different dialects. The majority of them tend to use the same characters, the same Chinese characters. Like, for example, if we're talking about in Hong Kong, they speak Cantonese, right? Primarily. Cantonese uses the traditional version of the characters, but simplified, if you're a simplified reader, you can understand quite a bit of traditional and the other way around. Taiwan also uses, they speak, you know, a lot of different dialects in Taiwan as well, but they also use those traditional characters. If you pop it into Google Translate, it's going to spit out the most standard version. But there are a lot of nuanced differences. Like, I actually just found this on, I think it was United Airlines that had a Chinese language site. And they had, there's two different ways depending on where you are, or there's a lot of different ways, but to say train, you know, one of them is Huochua, that's like Beijing style, traditional, you know, Chinese. In Taiwan, they tend to put the character Liechua. So little differences like that, they just call things different things. And we all know this from, you know, just localization. I know Aleda talks about that a lot. Like, if you're in Central America, they say popcorn different than in Spain or something like that. So you can't just have Spanish, you have to be hyper local. And that's kind of the same concept with Chinese.
Yeah, I find that stuff so fascinating, where tiny little differences can make such a big difference. And you can get on the funny side of things. We've seen this plenty of times, you know, plenty of memes where things will get translated and then translated back, and, oh, actually the direct translation, the classic example I remember reading I think it was like a joke book in the late 90s or early 2000s, was like, finger licking good from KFC turns into eat your fingers off if you translate it back. That's like, aha, hilarious kind of thing. But when that's your brand and you're actually saying that, as funny as that is and as silly as that is, that stuff kind of matters. And I know, funny enough, exactly what Sarah talked about on the show before, the logo for a particular car brand was a diamond shape. And that is female genitalia in a particular part of the world. So they were like, hey, yep, it's the vagina car. You're like, uh-oh, that's not what our brand, that's not what we want to call it. We can't change our logo now. How do we rebrand this? Oh, no. And you get little slogans and catchphrases like that. And I love seeing the little nuances, like you said there, just the word train, something so simple, so innocuous. There are certain words, and I know there is a lot of, this is true in Japanese, I know quite a bit more about Japanese than I do about Chinese, but there are numbers and words that sound similar to then have like lucky and unlucky connotations and stuff like that, right?
For sure.
Where if you include that number, you're implying something that you have no idea you're implying culturally. Language-wise, makes total sense. It's just the number four, doesn't matter. But culturally, you're talking about something that you should not have in your brand name at all.
Exactly. That's what, and actually I've seen that happen before. You mentioned the number four, that's si, and which is also the same pronunciation as death, right? So the number four kind of gets that connotation a little bit. But I've seen with picking a Chinese domain name, it even starts with that, you know, what's your domain? Because Chinese search engines are going to want to see, or Baidu is going to want to see, normally pinyin is what we recommend. So kind of the what is it called? The Latin alphabet version, right, spelled out. But there's a lot of cool things that you can do with it. Like 520, if you say those numbers in Chinese, it sounds like Waini, which is I love you. So if you do, you know, 520.com as a dating site, something like that. You know, so there's a lot of different ways you can play with it that make it really appealing to, you know, Chinese searchers. So it is fun, but it's stressful. You know, you really have to hire a good, or have someone that's really a native speaker, knows the environment, knows what performs well on different platforms to help you kind of develop that portion of your website.
Yeah, I find that stuff fascinating. Like, I don't speak any other languages, but through my work with that international school, I know like one or two words in a bunch of different languages, and all the weird little idioms and quotes and bits and pieces. They're like, oh yeah, definitely don't say this. If you say this exact phrase, it's going to freak people out, or people will fall in love with you if you say this phrase,
right?
This kind of stuff. I love those quirky little things where, you know, like you said, the Spanish speaking countries as well is totally the same, where the difference between Madrid and Barcelona, let alone Central and South America and Spain, like there are so many different nuances and changes there when you get towards the Catalan side of things as well. And as we, you know, we were talking about Baidu, we're talking about the Chinese language, the same is true in English as well, folks. If you're putting this back into Google, I am very British. I don't know if you can tell everybody. Adam, you are not British. We say things in different ways. You might say pants, I might say trousers. You might say cookie, I might say biscuit. And this was a whole conversation I was having with a client who the majority of their sales are in the US, but they are based in the UK. And we had a whole conversation about how to kind of rethink their kind of methodology behind coming up with product names. And it was a lot of clothing and stuff like that. Do you go with jumper or do you go with sweater? Are they the same thing? If it's a knitted wool thing for us, that's a jumper here in the UK. And a lot of the things they were selling were Christmas jumpers. And that's like a big thing around Christmas time. But novelty Christmas sweater does much better in America, obviously, because you guys in America don't say jumper in the same way that we do.
Right.
And it was like, okay, what do we call this product then? Like, good question. You need to have a separate UK and US page title and kind of like have that thought process of separating things into, even if, you know, I think the kind of reason I bring this up, we all take it for granted, right? Like, oh, I said that, oh, Chinese has so many different dialects. There's no way of knowing. And it seems so impenetrable to us who don't speak any of the languages, don't read any of the languages. English is the same way, folks.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I've worked with a lot of websites that want to, a lot of kind of low budget websites that want to just copy and paste. They're like, well, we would do great China. Oh, Chinese people would love this. It's like, all right, are you ready? Because there's a lot more to you. Can't just jump in. Yeah, personally, I don't think you're ready. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking to break out and start ranking on Baidu, it's definitely a journey. There's a lot of legwork behind it. The localization is a huge, huge part of that.
Yeah, I think that's something, like I said, a lot of us kind of take for granted in much of the English-speaking SEO world, and especially so much with just working with Google, where Google uses so many like synonyms and understands, oh, this British person is searching. You're searching from a UK IP address. You're searching through UK servers. So you actually mean this thing. Don't worry about it. I got you, bro. Don't worry about it. Whereas Sometimes that stuff really matters, and tiny little nuances can make a huge, huge difference. And I know there was a brilliant study by Lydia Infante talking about how much plurals can change search intent. And it never even occurred to me, like, the way you would search for a single product compared to a group of products turns it from like one singular object into, if you're looking to, if you're searching for more than one of those things, you're almost always trying to buy it. Like, oh yeah, I would never thought of that. That's a really interesting point. Like, you would type the word table in there. You're like, yeah, you're probably looking at a table, or you want to understand how to build a table. Loads of different informational searches. Tables, you're probably trying to buy tables. You're buying multiple things. Like, tiny little changes like that, even in English SEO, make a huge difference in terms of search intent. And I think a lot of us take that for granted.
Yeah, exactly. You want me to throw a real curveball at you?
Oh, please, man. Let's go for it.
No plurals in Chinese. So it's little things like that that you think about, where are they searching singular or plural? And it's like, that search engine has a lot of work to do to figure out intent. Maybe that's, I've actually never thought about that, but maybe that's part of the reason that, you know, the intent gets screwed up a lot and is a little bit, you know, foggier, in my opinion, on Baidu. The language is used, the language is a lot less, there's no past tense, there's no tenses. Mm. Like, there's those little nuances are a lot different in English and Chinese. So the way people are learning to use search engines is totally different in that language than it is, you know, over here, what we're used to.
Yeah, I feel like I could talk about this all day and pick your brain about stuff, because I find this stuff, I find the language stuff as fascinating as I do the SEO stuff.
Me too. I love it.
So let's kind of wrap things up. And I think that I think we've kind of covered a lot of the big misconceptions, a lot of the myths and stuff like that. Is there anything kind of big key takeaways that we haven't covered that you think the listeners should know about Baidu and its kind of duality relationship with Google at this point?
Yeah. No, I think we did a really good job covering a lot of it.
Hey,
my big takeaway is just that, you know, watch out with the search culture and where people are searching. And I think it's only going to get more important to establish a presence. I personally am not recommending any of my clients to get on Reddit right now and, you know, create their brand on Reddit. Reddit's scary to me from a brand perspective, from a marketing perspective. I love it as a user, but nobody wants to see their Reddit thread spammed with, you know, check out my website. But I would definitely keep an eye on that, not just on Reddit, but a lot of other platforms. Keep an eye on the usage and your, how that platform fits with your brand. Because if search culture starts to shift a little bit to how it is in China, that's only going to become more and more important. If people, instead of going to Google Maps, they go to Yelp. Instead of going to Google, instead of Google Shopping, they go to Amazon directly. If that starts to happen, you want to be ready for it, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's, like I said, something we've been talking about a lot with the DMA side of things, trying to wrest the monopoly away from Google so that it's not just, you know, the talk of the SERP real estate, right? It's not necessarily those top 10 blue links on the first page. It is that real estate of map packs and local packs and shopping carousels and all this kind of stuff that really catches the eye. And on top of that, you've got the paid search results there as well. Like, so much of the SERP real estate and your view on the screen is taken up by so much of Google's stuff that I think there is a genuine reason to think about this stuff, right? To talk about that and think about why you need to branch out side of things. I know Gus Bologia, who I had on the show a few weeks ago, was talking about this exact thing and was saying how, you know, it does a lot more comparison sites and a lot more kind of listicles and stuff. It's prioritizing the pros versus cons neutrality side of things that Google seems to be pushing a lot as well. And I think that is definitely something we all need to be a lot more conscious of going forward in SEO for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Adam. It's been a real pleasure to pick your brain about Baidu and learn a lot in the last 45 minutes or so. If folks do want to go and follow you and keep up to date with Baidu updates, the latest episodes of your podcast and all that kind of stuff, how can they do that?
Yeah, super active on LinkedIn, Twitter. So LinkedIn, just search my name, Twitter, DI_FriscoSEO. Throw me a follow and hopefully I like to stay on top of the news with Baidu. So all the tech news. Baidu just, they're going hard into AI. I guess we didn't talk too much about that. They're going very hard into AI.
We went the whole episode without talking about AI. Hooray.
Hey! It's a new record. Good on us. But yeah, a lot of cool news coming out of there. Their Ernie bot is doing some really cool stuff. So yeah, give me a follow. Stay up to date. It's interesting.
I love that it's called Ernie. That's just the maddest, the maddest, weirdest thing in the world. I love it. And it gave me an excuse to do Mark and me as Bert and Ernie on the podcast thumbnail. And that's just been the highlight of my podcast career so far. And I just loved it.
Perfect.
From a very selfish point of view, I very much enjoy Bert versus Ernie.
Sure. Yeah, me too.
But yeah, folks, please do go and follow Adam. Really pleasure to follow you. Like I said, a legit follower of just like, oh, this guy's talking about really interesting stuff. Let's talk about cool things on the podcast. So yeah, go and follow Adam on both Twitter and LinkedIn. Go and check out Atagrow. And yeah, thank you so much for joining me, Adam. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you, Jack.
And that wraps up this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. If you're choosing to watch on YouTube or Spotify, please do give us a like and subscribe and rate us on Spotify and all that good stuff. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you're using, you can also rate us on there, give us a review. Hopefully you learned as much as I did, because I learned a lot, especially in the prep of this episode. I know we mentioned it a couple of times throughout the interview, but I really, really highly recommend you go and check out that Baidu ranking factor study that is just 200 pages long, but even the skimming and highlights and kind of stuff that I covered, I thought was really, really interesting and actually gave me some insights and some ideas for some of the stuff that I'm doing with some of my clients at the moment. And I know it's going to be interesting kind of how it relates to Google as well. So even if you're not worried about your clients ranking on Baidu and you're not specifically targeting the Chinese market, I think there is still a lot to learn about how search engines work and how the differences and similarities between Baidu and Google can help you grow as a search marketer as well. So highly recommend you go and check out that. Like I said, at the end of the interview, and I think about halfway through the interview as well, go and check out all the links for all the resources Adam and I talked about. You can go and check that out either in the show description if you're listening or the video description if you're watching on YouTube. Please do go and check them out. I highly recommend all of the resources we talked about. And go and follow Adam. I think he's a really, really interesting guy, a brilliant follow on both Twitter and LinkedIn. And if you want to learn more about Baidu and broaden your horizons in terms of not just thinking about Google all of the time, I think it'll be a really, really great idea to follow Adam and what he's up to at Atagrow. In the next few weeks, I have some fantastic guests coming up. We can talk about everything from reporting for enterprise clients to common sins that agencies commit, which I think is something a lot of us who have worked in the industry can definitely relate to. And of course, I'll have the monthly recap with the one and only Mark Williams Cook at the end of April. We'll summarize all the important stuff you need to know from the month that was April 2024. If you're going to Brighton SEO, have a fantastic time. Say hello to everyone for me. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be there. I'm going to a family wedding, but I know a lot of people who are going. I know Sarah and Tasman are still continuing to do the live podcast. So if you're in Brighton, go and check out the live podcast. That's happening on Wednesday, the 24th of April. Free pizza, free drinks,
link in the show notes. Go and check that out. And like I said, unfortunately, I won't be there, but I'll know they have some fantastic guests who I'm sure will be even better than I was on the podcast when we do the live events. So stay tuned for all of that in the next few weeks. Of course, we'll be powering through to May in the not too distant future as well. So stay tuned for all the good stuff that's coming up on Search with Kanda over the next few weeks. Until then, thank you so much for listening and have a lovely week.